The last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
For some of us, this lockdown might be a little bit more tolerable than the first one because of the availability of live sport on television to watch. But how long can that actually go on for if there are health consequences for players involved, if there's difficulties in moving players across borders? And indeed, is it ethical to continue to have sports ongoing when many other essential services actually have to stop? And what are the financial consequences, though, for many of the sports if they are forced by external circumstances to stop again? Now, we have Miguel Delaney with us, the chief football writer with The Independent, Kieran Cunningham, the chief sports writer with the Irish Daily Star. But I want to start with Brendan Fanning, the rugby correspondent with the Sunday Independent, because we've had confirmation in the last hour of what was expected, but is very serious for the sport of rugby. The Champions Cup, the next two rounds will not be going ahead. Until when, do we know?
No, we don't. EPC Ormat have said that it is a temporary suspension, but EPC Or know just as well as the Lions know, just as well as the Six Nations and the Pro 14 and every other group of sports administrators, that nobody knows what's going to happen the week after next. So it's all very well to say, look, this is temporarily suspended, we're going to come back to this, we're going to try and get these games run. I don't think anybody reckons that the last two rounds of pool rugby are going to be completed, and I think already EPC are looking to the most effective and fairest way of finishing the competition, so going straight to the knockout stages and what mechanism they can come up with at that point to keep, I wouldn't say keep people happy, but to make the best of a bad lot.
Six Nations, is it going to happen according to schedule?
Six Nations is different, Matt. I don't know if it's going to happen according to schedule, but with Six Nations is, as it sounds, Six Nations. It's not like the European club competitions, which are two competitions and 40 clubs, over 40 clubs. So those who run the Six Nations will tell you, look, we got through the Autumn Nations Cup in reasonable nick, that we have learned a lot from the protocol around putting on matches in closed stadia in front of a handful of people, all of
yeah,
whom
but
are
things
working.
Were very different then, weren't they, to the way they are now?
Well, things were different then, Matt, but I would imagine the protocols will just get tighter and tighter, and it'll become they'll become as even more careful than they are being at the moment. And yeah, it might get knocked on the head, but I think by virtue of the fact that it is a smaller competition that has already been, as the Six Nations, that has already have experience of what is required, they have a better chance. Also, they could postpone, but, you know...
But why don't they move it to later in the year, at a time when perhaps they might be able to get the fans back in, not just to create atmosphere, but also to create revenue from being at the games? Or are the Six Nations totally tied into the idea of doing it according to the normal schedule so as to get all the TV money in on schedule?
Yes, that is a big part of it. But also, the other part of it is, if you pick it up from now, or from its designated kickoff, the second week in Feb, and you slot it back in the summertime, when, well, will the Lions be going on? We don't know. It's unlikely. But no matter where you put it into the schedule, Matt, somebody else is going to get squeezed, and there's a turf war over that, plus there are other issues to be decided. So no matter what way you look at this, it is a nightmare.
Yeah, and I'd imagine rugby, more than some other sports, is suffering financially from all of this. It's not the richest sport in the world, and it would appear now that with the loss of revenues, could we see teams, even countries, international countries, effectively going out of business?
Well, you will see, and the round of contracts is going to be very, very interesting coming up at the end of the season, and lots of people are going to have, with plenty of credibility, are going to plead inability to pay, or certainly inability to pay anything like you were getting. And sport considers itself, and I'm sure you're going to get to this with the lads, sport considers itself very important in the general makeup of things, and government considers sport very important. Because if everything else has been locked down and there's nothing on TV, nothing to distract people, Jesus, what a depressing prospect.
Yeah, indeed, Kieran Cunningham. How much is that likely to play in a desire to keep sports open, that governments want something to occupy the masses?
Yeah, that's a fair point. Like, because you know, just talking to you a few times, like back say September, October time, I wasn't that confident of the All Ireland Championships going ahead. But at government level, particularly with Taoiseach Micheál Martin, he was very, very keen for it to happen, and it did happen. But largely, it happened because the government helped. The GAA got 15 million for it to go ahead. And one of the difficulties the GAA faces at the moment is, there has been no word of any similar grant aid coming from the government this time around. You know, maybe that was a once-off payment. And because they've gone with this split season, the Ginger County will go first. It looks very likely that the entire championship, or maybe 80% of it anyway, will go ahead again behind closed doors. So that's a huge issue when it comes to revenue. And last week the GAA did something they'd never done before, that they contacted all the county boards and asked them basically to cost their county teams spending in advance, like work out how much they're going to spend on the county team between the league and championship. And in the past, the average cost of a training session for an inter-county team has been calculated at around €4,500. And some counties would spend more, some would spend a bit less. But it is a lot of money to come up with when there's no money coming in. Absolutely no money coming in.
And Kieran, then the league is due to start in how many weeks' time?
The last weekend of February, both the hurling and football leagues are supposed to start. Then the championship is supposed to start in mid-April. But the league, because it's a shortened calendar, the league has been changed. So it's because they want to restrict the amount of travel involved because of COVID, because of the COVID situation. So, for example, in Division 1, you will have Division 1 North, which will be Donegal, Armagh, Tyrone and Monaghan. It will be four Ulster teams. Like, it will be a mini Ulster championship. So they won't be travelling outside of Ulster. So they're trying to do that. That's one thing they're doing. And they won't, there's roughly half the amount of league games you normally would have. So, but
Kieran, you also have happened. The issue then of training in advance, because we've already seen controversy involving the Cork football team and the Down football team having been specifically told, for good reason, there's to be no group training. They've both been caught doing it.
Yeah, and now this is a big challenge for the GAA and how they deal with this, because the GAA have there's been a fair amount of goodwill towards the GAA over volunteerism at grassroots level to help out during COVID, etc., over the way they ran the championships. But there was also anger over things that happened around county finals. There was also anger from other sports who felt they got special treatment, financially especially, and even a lot of the Olympic sports are still trying to qualify athletes for Tokyo, if Tokyo does happen, haven't been able to compete or train. But the GAA were allowed to go ahead. But you have this situation now, and this is the thing, Matt, no way was it just Cork and Down. Like, I know, even at club level, I know of one hurling club with a high-profile manager who trained collectively last week. And when you consider clubs don't go into action, you know, because the fifth season really don't get going until July, but this is going on. Because this has always been the way in the GAA, that people turn a blind eye to rules. And the big problem with this is the GAA said you can have no training until the end of February. So to me, anyone who's training now isn't insured. Or there's a big question mark over the insurance. So any player who's putting themselves in that position has been very foolish.
And Brendan Fanning, I want to go back to you, because there is a major issue with rugby as well, isn't there, at the non-elite level, in that clubs effectively have come to a halt as well, and schools rugby as well, which could impact on the future generations of players.
Well, it will if it keeps going on. I'm sorry to say, Matt, that the club level, it's always paddy last when it comes to the IRFU deciding what's important and what's not important. And in this issue, they are well down the pecking order for the simple reason that 80% of the union's revenue comes from the professional game, and all their eggs are in that basket, and they're running around with their hair on fire currently trying to salvage something from the professional game and are not looking at all with any great degree of intent at the club game. Last time I spoke to a guy in the IRFU who would be well-versed on clubs and their future, the extent of his ambition was, if we can get people playing rugby of any description after Christmas, and by after Christmas, he didn't mean in the first couple of weeks in Jan, if they can get people playing rugby, just friendly rugby, clubs playing the club down the road, that will be sufficient for the moment. The aspirations of salvaging an AIL and getting that back up and running, forget that.
Okay, let's go to Miguel Delaney, chief football writer with The Independent. Miguel, I know you focus most on English football, so if you're not across the Celtic story, my apologies for bringing it up. But it does show a bizarre situation, doesn't it, that Celtic are going into a match tonight against Hibernian without 14 players, one who's got COVID-19, the rest who are self-isolating, no manager Neil Lennon there either, but the game still goes ahead.
Oh, yeah, completely. And also, I mean, the Celtic situation reflects one of the ways in which, I don't think it will happen, but one of the ways in which it at least possible that elite football could get shut down. Given, obviously, I mean, we saw Nicola Sturgeon even talk last week about how, you know, sports, the exemption for elite sport could be taken away because of situations where Celtic were going to Dubai. That's obviously in light of what's happening now. That's been viewed in a much more different light.
Although she didn't like the pictures she saw as well, Miguel, where it was suggested certain players were perhaps not doing as much social distancing as they should have been.
Exactly, yeah. And this is the thing. I mean, I've been working on this all day, and like one of the lines I've literally written for tomorrow is that it isn't impossible that football could talk itself or drive itself with cases like this into a suspension when it isn't strictly necessary, because from everyone you talk to in football, they feel that the staging of certainly the Premier League and now the Championship, as well as the SPL, you would say, they feel that the staging, which is the playing, the training and the travelling to games, that's completely safe, that players aren't contracting COVID from playing or training or travelling. But of course, and with you know the recent Christmas schedule being a part of this, that there's been that's where the recent cases have come from, allied with a certain complacency maybe that crept into some closeout rules, and obviously so many stories about you know, transgressions or players breaching protocol. So I mean, like early this morning, I woke up to a few messages from people in government and in football about how there was a rumor going around that elite sport was about to be cancelled. Obviously, that wasn't the case. And when I put it to someone quite senior in running English football, their exact words were, not yet. Because at the moment, there is will from the English government want elite football to continue. But there is disquiet about kind of, you know, players breaching protocol and something. Now, from that, the Premier League is starting a real crackdown on it. They've basically told clubs that if clubs don't sanction players breaching protocol, because the whole enterprise could be at risk here, that the Premier League will
Miguel,
start to
sanction. I was really taken. We had Mark Lawrence and Tony Cascarino with us on Friday evening for our normal weekend preview of the fixtures. And I've never heard them less enthusiastic about watching football. They seem to sort of be drained by the absence of atmosphere at the games, the fact that the games are coming so thick and fast now as well, that for them a bit of the joy seems to have gone out of it. Is that feeling widespread in England at the current time, particularly when you have such large death tolls and so many people being ill?
Well, I don't think so, because as soon as kind of the proposition was raised today that we could have elite sport cancelled, we suddenly have heard all the opposite. I think there is an issue with the kind of the sense of the grind of football right now. And that touches on a point Brendan made out rugby about how there's a turf war. And it's been the exact same with football. And one of the problems football may have, because, you know, more postponements are going to be inevitable, but football has basically given itself no space for these postponements, because not a single body in football was really willing to give up their part of the game. They all insisted they have to have all their fixtures completed. With the FA Cup this weekend, almost a classic case in that regard. I mean, you know, as romantic as, say, the Chorley Town story was, it was still basically, you know, a non-league team playing a bunch of kids in front of nobody just to fulfil fixtures, which seems, when you stand back, is a bit remarkable in a situation where the calendar is creaking and football does need some space. But football hasn't helped itself in that regard. And but if it was to be taken away, I think it's the complete opposite. And let's remember the situation. I mean, as you said at the top, let's remember the situation we're in March and April, where people were crying out for any sort of sport at all.
And financially as well, I suppose, Miguel, the teams want the TV revenue guaranteed. Even if they can't get the crowds in, they still need money from their sponsors and they need money from TV. So they will put on a show to get at least that.
Well, that's exactly it. And actually, in terms of the calendar, this is a point that Klopp made in October that he was a little bit derided for, but there was a grain of truth in it, that so many of the fixtures have to take place because of contractual demands, or have to take place at certain times. but all these contracts are based on the pre-COVID era, when maybe a little bit more flexibility should be allowed in that regard. And like that is why they've insisted on international friendlies, which now seem ludicrous in light of the calendar at the moment. That's why, you know, the Champions League has to take place exactly as usually mandated. It's why the FA Cup has to go ahead. In fact, the only two concessions that the football calendar has made that I can see are basically that the League Cup semi-finals were one leg rather than two legs, and we've got rid of FA Cup replays. Other than that, partly because of TV contracts, they are insisting with a normal calendar in very abnormal times.
Okay, Kieran Cunningham, chief sports writer of the Irish Daily Star. I don't know if Cheltenham will ever be forgiven for having allowed the crowds in last March when lots of people said it should have been closed then to the crowds. But so it's almost certain there will be no crowds there this year. But could there be a circumstance, you think, in which even the Irish horses won't be able to travel and the jockeys and trainers?
Well, it all depends on what happens, I would think, over the next 5 or 6 weeks, really. But, you know, as things stand now, it would be problematic. So, but, you know, you would hope things would improve by then. But, you know, it would be a very different Cheltenham without spectators. You know, I know you're touching on it there with Miguel, but, you know, the whole vibe about Cheltenham is not just the horses and the trainers and the jockeys and the owners. It's about the people who go there for basically the party, you know, and the thousands who go from this country. So, you know, I can see where Mark Lawrence and Tony Gasparini are coming from. I've found it increasingly difficult to watch a lot of sports. The All-Ireland Championships for a large part left me fairly cold, particularly, you know, in the literal sense, when you're in the grounds, but also it just doesn't feel real in an empty ground. And I'm sure Brendan feels the same watching, you know,
because
both international and provincial level.
Yeah, because this, you know, the Champions Cup games, the Six Nations, a large part of it as well is the social aspect, isn't it, for many people?
Yeah, it is. But we're past that, Matt. We're past the eerie feeling you get when you go to a stadium and you're reporting on a match and, you know, you're one of 50 or 60 or 100 people at it or whatever. Like, it is unreal, but it is, sadly, that's the place we're in. Look, just to run across here, there's a story breaking here. The Premiership in England are going to take the 2 weeks off offered by the cancellation or postponement of the last two rounds in Europe, whereas our provinces are going to try and get rid of one, if not two, of their postponed games. The English clubs are going to take a complete break from the Premiership. Which
that's in rugby, just to clarify for our listeners.
Sorry, it's in rugby. And if the Six Nations should kick off on time, then that's not going to do any favours for Eddie Jones to have his players with effectively 3 weeks off before the tournament kicks off.
Okay, I want to finish with you, Kieran Cunningham, by asking you about the Olympic Games, because we heard from Stephen Doyle on the 5 of 5 that now apparently surveys been done in Japan say the Japanese don't want it to go ahead. They had been remarkably COVID-free, and now they're getting hit with it belatedly, a bit like us. So do you think now, does that mean that there might be no Olympics?
Yeah, well, there's definitely a huge doubt over it now. You know, I was at a couple of media briefings before, you know, back around October, November, and the Olympic Federation here were adamant that it would go ahead, that's the advice they were being given. But things have changed dramatically since then. Japan has gone into a state of emergency for a month. I've been looking to book the flights to Tokyo, but there's no real point, because even if it does go ahead, there's a chance now you might go out 10 days in advance and quarantine before the Olympics, or 10 days, it might even be 2 weeks beforehand. So I don't actually know when to book now. So everything's up in the air. And it's very difficult for athletes, because a lot of them still haven't qualified, and the qualifying tournaments haven't been fixed. So if it does go ahead, I have a feeling it'll be behind closed doors, and it'll very much be a slimmed down version.
Okay, Kieran Cunningham, Brendan Fanning and Miguel Delaney, thank you all for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.